Next, the authors will discuss the four human endowments: self-awareness, conscience, independent will, and creative imagination.
I suggest there are basically four unique human endowments, four unique human capacities, and that all of the seven habits basically draw upon a combination of these four, all of them. I also suggest that since all seven habits are found in quadrant two, that you need to exercise these four human endowments in various ways and most importantly, synergistically, together, in order to optimize quadrant two. These four unique endowments do not pertain to animals. A human being has one additional capacity that animals do not have. That is self-awareness. What does that mean? They can think, yes, but so can animals. But they can think about their thinking. It's consciousness recoiling upon itself. In other words, you can examine the scripts of your life. You can stand apart and look at them, meaning you are not those scripts. And it would be very easy to withdraw from the use of self-awareness and just kind of let those scripts live your life. That's called being lived rather than living. That's living out agendas, timetables, scripts, programs that are put into us. That's what animals do. They're totally a product of their instinct and or training. An animal cannot re-script itself. It cannot examine its own life, stand apart from itself, and make itself over. It takes the capacity of self-examination. Seneca, the great Greek philosopher, taught, as long as you live, keep learning how to live. But what is more significant than that is that we can learn from the experiences of other people. We don't have to have their experiences in order to learn those lessons. That self-awareness, which taps into memory, into self-knowledge, into the expansion of our consciousness, into history, into biography, autobiography, into the capacity to empathize within the frame of reference of other people, to open up entire new worlds to ourselves, is very, very unique. Animals do not even possess one degree of it. It's not a matter of degree, it's a matter of kind. It is the unique human endowment. All the other endowments become operative through that one. This is why self-knowledge is the basis of all other knowledges. Until a person knows himself, he will tend to project his motivations on other people's behavior. That's the basis of judgment. People don't really describe others. They describe themselves when they label others. They're projecting their frame of reference, their value system, on others. They evaluate others by their behavior, themselves by their intentions. So when they see someone's behavior, they interpret it through their intentions. They are unaware. They're not using self-knowledge. Once you are aware of yourself, then you take into account that awareness and seek to empathize with somebody else and see how they see themselves, how they see their world. Otherwise, the tendency is to look into your own heart and think you see the world, to mistake introspection for observation. And that's where people get into trouble. And that's one of the reasons why performance review processes are so clumsy, so ineffective, so artificial, so contrived, so unnatural, and ultimately so insulting. Another very powerful, unique human endowment is imagination. Imagination moves beyond self-knowledge. It moves beyond memory. It moves into the world of creation, of the unseen, into the world of the future. People who live out of their memories could always be, in a sense, limited by what their memory tells them they're capable of doing. Say their memory has defined them, because of the social mirror, as being a certain kind of person. So they live that way and they never see themselves in any other way. But really, latently, dormantly, lies tremendous capacities which remain contained within and are never unleashed, never unlocked, simply because there is not an imagined capacity being exercised where they envision themselves. See, the power that we've been talking about, a vision, basically, is a fruit of this creative imagination. That's a very powerful, unique endowment. Einstein said that imagination is greater than knowledge. A third endowment is conscience. This is the deep moral sense that is universal. There is a deep, generic sense of right and wrong in all people. If people gradually ignore that sense and start to live a lifestyle totally contrary to it, that can be numbed. It can be weakened. There are these deep moral sentiments, these moral roots that seem to be common. When we do mission statement work, it makes no difference what religion, culture, nationality, race. If enough people interact freely and synergistically who are also informed and trusting, they essentially come up with the same values. They essentially agree on the same fundamental moral concepts surrounding fairness, kindness, the development and use of talent, integrity, and contribution, service, meaning. In short, to live, to love, to learn, to leave a legacy. This is all part of the conscience. Now, Hitler had tremendous imagination, but there was no conscience. It was an unprincipled imagination. The imagination excited and electrified a people for a period of time. But without conscience, it could not survive. Independent will is the fourth human endowment, which means the capacity, if necessary, to swim upstreams, to swim against the current, against the grain, the discipline of the will itself, to exercise the conscience and the imagination, and to make a marvelous thing happen. But all of this is still predicated upon self-awareness. Otherwise, people may think they're exercising their will, their imagination, and their conscience, but if they're just living out previous scripts and they're unaware, they are really not fully living. All four endowments need to be exercised in a harmonious and synergistic way to release the fullness of our humanity. And all four human endowments need to be exercised and developed to higher and higher levels of refinement. We'll go further into how to develop these endowments, but I wanted to introduce this concept of the space between stimulus and response and how these four unique human endowments lie inside that space and need to be exercised and developed in order to use that space wisely and to enlarge that space. If the space is not used, if those endowments are not used, that space can become very, very narrow to the point to where stimulus and response are inseparable. The stimulus produces the response. Notice yourself when you're driving, for instance, or when you're irritated or when you're fatigued and people are upsetting you or you have slow pokes on the road. Just notice your response. See how connected you are to your environment, whether it be a social environment, a physical environment, and if you have anonymity, how you really behave, when no one knows who you are, when you're alone, when you're in the dark. These are often the times when stimulus-response can get very, very close together. It all depends on how well-developed these endowments are. This is very exciting material, extremely exciting, because once you become aware of these endowments and you are aware that you can start to develop them and deepen them and expand them, and they can get larger and more powerful, you gradually get this sense that literally you can become a force of nature in your own right. You can become an extremely powerful change catalyst in making all kinds of things happen. You don't have to ever blame anybody or any circumstance for your response. You become inwardly freer and freer. You're truly liberated. Liberated from genes, from psychic scarring, from social environmental pressures, from the weaknesses of your boss, or the misaligned systems of your organization. You see, the moment you get your mind focused upon those things outside yourself or things that have happened to you before, The moment you start to look elsewhere for explanation, that very moment, you give that power and that freedom away. You literally disempower yourself and begin to empower the weaknesses of other people. It isn't the poisonous snake that bites you that does the serious damage. It's chasing that snake that drives the poison to the heart. It isn't the stimulus, the bite of the snake, that does the most serious damage. It can hurt you, just like we can be hurt physically in our temporal circumstances by the injustices, the unkindnesses of other people. But the real damage, the serious damage, the damage that has permanence and real soul-destroying power lies in our freedom to choose a response. It lies in that space. And if the conscience remains undeveloped and the imagination is dormant and the self-awareness is hidden, is latent, and there's no independent will to act on those other endowments because they're dead, look what the person is totally subject to. And the whole person's life could be shaped by that circumstance. And the person might gather other people around who feel similarly to massage his or her heart. They feel validated. They find additional evidence to hear new reasons as to why this person is so wrong. And then this becomes, in a sense, the cement to their relationships. Bad mud, to use the construction expression. Very bad. Stress it and it'll break. I do not know a more exciting or a more compelling, a more ennobling, uplifting, inspiring concept than this awareness of this space and these endowments. I do not know a more clear evidence of choosing to be disempowered than to ignore these endowments, to ignore this space, to ignore this internal power and freedom, and to essentially become a victim of people, of their actions, or of circumstances, or of organizations that have seemingly betrayed you, or of the environment, or of society, or of one's genes. The ultimate chosen slavery, a self-prison.
Building these endowments is a process of nurturing them and exercising them on a continuous basis. And there are a lot of ways that we can develop each of these endowments. One of the best ways to improve in our ability to be aware of ourselves is to keep a personal journal. Do you like the results that you're getting in your life? What are the paradigms that those results are based on? Some questions you might want to ask yourself are, what can I learn from today? What's working well and why? What can I do to be better tomorrow? How can I be more principle-centered? A journal is really wonderful because it enables us to examine our own scripting. If we find ourselves doing something that perhaps when we grew up in our home, we saw our own parents do and we said, oh, I'll never do that when I'm a parent, but now we're doing it, then we can get it out on the table and look at it and say, why? What is the paradigm underlying this behavior, the way I'm acting? Keeping a personal journal enables us to understand more about the other endowments as well. It enables us to look at conscience and the way it affects our lives and the way we respond to it. It enables us to look at our goals and to see how we're exercising our independent will. Are we meeting our goals? What's getting in the way? It enables us to exercise creative imagination as well. What do we see for ourselves? What are we envisioning? What are we dreaming, thinking of in our lives? Are these dreams based on principles? Are they something that we really do want to accomplish and think will bring us quality of life? Or are we valuing things that are not based on principle and that won't bring quality of life? It's a quadrant two activity. It's important, but it's not urgent, and it takes proactivity to do it, to set aside the time, even if it's just a few minutes at the end of the day, evaluate your experience of the day, and keep a journal.